And think about the times that, you know, maybe there's some neighbor that is somebody that is, you know, crappy and you stepped on my lawn, get away from my house, that kind of stuff. But how many times does somebody like that, maybe they're suffering? When I was still in my 30s, I lived in an apartment house in Northwest Portland. And there was a woman that lived on my floor. She was an elderly woman, and she was, for whatever reason, she did not like me. I don't think she liked anybody, but it seemed like whenever we would cross paths, she would glare at me. And it didn't matter what kind of a response I gave her, or a friendly, cheery hello, she would glare at me. And one day, I'm walking from the bus, and I stopped into the grocery store nearby, and I saw these bouquets of flowers that were on sale. So I bought a bouquet of flowers, and I sat down on the stoop of the entrance to the apartment house, knowing that at any minute she's going to come back. And there she was, walking into the courtyard with that scowl on her face. And I stood up, and I opened the door for her, and I handed her the bouquet of flowers. And she, "What's this about?" And I said, "I was in the grocery store, and I saw these flowers, and they were so beautiful, they reminded me of you. And I just wanted to give you these flowers as my neighbor." And she burst into tears. And that evening, she came knocking on my door, and she said, "I baked a cake for you. Would you come over and have a piece of cake and a cup of tea with me?" And I said, "I would be honored." So I went into her little apartment, and I had a piece of cake and a cup of tea. And then she opened up to me how her children and her grandchildren all lived in Portland, and that none of them cared about her at all. She said, "I never hear." And she said, "A few weeks ago, one of my daughters said, 'Oh, I'm going to pick you up and have you over for dinner.' And then at the last minute, as I'm all ready and excited, she calls up and says, 'Oh, I'm sorry, Mom, something else has come up. We'll have to postpone it. We'll do it soon.'" And she said, and it didn't happen. She says, "My children don't care about me. They don't love me. I never hear from them. I'm the one that has to call them." And she said, "That's why I've become a crabby old woman." And lots of times, the people that we come in contact with are like that. We don't know what cross they're bearing or what sadness that they're carrying in their hearts. But we could be that angel unaware that gives them a sense of community, of comfort, of actually being liked, if not loved, by how we treat them. And I have a young man who's a spiritual son of mine now. And I've written about him, so some of you might have read about Shane, who's an iconographer in Spokane. Shane and his wife are both covered with tattoos. And Shane is a tattoo artist, a very good one. Shane has a tattoo on his neck, he has them on his wrists, tops of his hands and his arms, and his neck. And his wife, same thing, lots of tattoos. Beautiful woman, beautiful family of four kids. And I first heard about Shane from one of the other guys that had joined the Salish Brotherhood. He said that he has this friend, Shane, who told him that when he and his wife had traveled to another town in Washington State to venerate the Mer Streaming icon, which I'm going to anoint everyone with, of Hawaii. And they were all excited about this, and they along with their four children, come into this church. And as they walked in, all of a sudden, there's mothers that are grabbing their kids and pulling them away from them. They see the tattoos.
Yeah.
Remember that? I've read about Brogo. And they're pulling away their kids. And Melissa saw this, and it just broke her heart. And she said, Shane, I want to get out of here. So here's the icon. They didn't even get close enough to venerate the icon. And they went out, and Shane told me that his wife cried in the parking lot. And they went back to Spokane. So I heard about this. And one of the guys had invited Shane to come to the monastery to join the Salish Brotherhood, that we were having a retreat there. So everybody is there. There's 14 guys there. And we're in the trapeza eating our meal. And one of the guys says, oh, Shane just drove up. So I went out the trapeza door into the plaza. As Shane comes through the gate and walks into the plaza. And I went down and I said, oh, Shane, I'm so glad to finally meet you. And I gave him a big hug. And then I walked him in. And as we went into the chapel, or into the trapeza, I held his arm up like this, and I said, look, Shane is here. And then I went like this. And I said, look at these groovy tattoos. And it was like his whole demeanor changed from the expectation that he was going to be rejected to realizing he was being celebrated. And eventually, it was that weekend that he asked me to be a spiritual father. And then I found out from his wife that he sees me not only as his spiritual father, but his dad, because he didn't have a dad in his life. His dad was missing from birth on, had no father. And he is one of the most gifted iconographers I know. We have we had him redo our logo of our monastery because the one that we had, we had the same script, All Merciful Savior Monastery on Vashon Island, and then 1986, the founding of this particular brotherhood. But the problem was that, the problem with it was that the face of Christ that we had was this Greek one, you know, very somber. And so when you're driving into the grounds of the monastery and you see this sign that says All Merciful Savior, or Christ the All Merciful Savior a Monastery, and then the logo with this kind of angry looking Christ, and I thought, you know, so we had him redo it. This is the one that I have for those that get a notification from my blog every day. And what's amazing about this is that this is the Sinai icon of Christ. And when I showed this to Father Patrick, that's doing the frescoes at the church in Santa Rosa, he looked at this and he says, this is amazing. He said, this is very difficult to do a drawing like this. An iconographic drawing like this is very difficult. And this Serbian man, who is an incredible fresco painter, who's doing a church in Washington, Eastern Washington, is so impressed with Shane that he's invited him to come and help him with the frescoes. And when he saw this, he sent this to Sinai, because he knows the monks at Sinai. He sent this to Sinai. Look, this is this budding iconographer who can do this. And see again, It's easy to judge someone by the externals. Easy. Ooh, look at that. Or the wrong color. Well, you know, this is a Greek parish. You are Italian. Same blood, by the way. Same genetic makeup. But you there is a worst story I ever told. Archbishop Mark, the OCA Archbishop of Eastern Pennsylvania. I've been there in his diocese numerous times, and he told me this himself. There was a black woman came into one of his parishes, and I can't remember whether it was Philadelphia or another city, but came into this parish, and she had been feeling drawn to Orthodoxy, and she finally decided to attend a liturgy, and she walked in, and a woman walked up to her and said, "What are you doing here? We don't have any. We don't allow meth addicts in this church. And there's a church down the street from you that EMC or whatever the Methodist AMC. There's a church down there for you." And this woman burst into tears and walked out, never to be seen again. And when Bishop Mark found out about it, because there were witnesses, he went to that parish and he stood on the ambon and he said, "I don't know who you are. You know who you are. But you who did this unspeakable act, I am giving you a penance that for the rest of your life, every day, you are to pray for the soul of that woman. And by the authority that I have as your bishop, no one can lift that. Until your deathbed, you have to pray for that woman." So, you know, genetically, we're the same. And yet, this racism that is against everything that our church teaches permeates even Orthodoxy. Mm-hmm. And you know the proof of that? The whiteness of our parishes. Mm-hmm. Everybody is white. Mm-hmm. And the few that are black who dare to enter our churches have to really suck it up to stay because of the looks that they get. There was a man years ago that used to buy 5 or 6 prayer ropes from us every 2 months. His name was Richard. And he lived in New York City. Never met him. But periodically we'd get this order, 5 new prayer ropes or 6 new prayer ropes. And one day he called when I answered the phone. And he said, "Oh, this is Richard from New York. I want to order another 5 prayer ropes. And I said, "Oh, I've been hoping that I would pick up the phone when you called. I've got to ask you, do you lose your prayer ropes? Or why do you order so many prayer ropes?" And he says, "Oh, I give them out to people.
Yeah.
I give them out because I want to encourage people to say the Jesus prayer." I said, "Wonderful." I said, "What parish do you go to? What Orthodox parish do you go to?" "Oh, I don't go to an Orthodox parish. I'm Roman Catholic." And I said, you're probably not aware, but the Jesus prayer is meant to be as the pulse of the life of the church, and it is in sync with the divine liturgy of the Orthodox Church. Mm-hmm. I said, "Have you ever considered becoming Orthodox?" And he says, "No, but maybe I will." And I said, "Have you ever been to an Orthodox church?" And he said, "No." And I said, "I encourage you to check it out." So he worked in a hospital. So the following week, a Greek Orthodox priest came into the hospital to see somebody. And Richard went up to this priest and he said, You know, I've been buying prayer robes from this monastery in Washington State, and the abbot there just told me that I should check out Orthodoxy, and I've never been to an Orthodox church. And the priest said, oh, come to our church. I'd love to see you on Sunday. Here's the address. Here's my card. Here's the address, and liturgy starts at such and such a time. So Richard said, okay. So he decided to show up.